Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
High atop the San Francisco skyline, this is the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game. Now, Damon Bruce.
Thank God. Thank God we got Warrior Basketball back on TV tonight. I have absolutely no idea what I'm supposed to be doing with my evenings. I go home, I sit in front of the TV, there's no Warrior game on, I don't feel complete. The Warriors officially complete me. We're dating, you might have heard.
I heard.
And tonight, we're going to pick this romance back up. Phoenix Suns about to catch a little heat, don't you think? I mean, come on. I would not want to be the Phoenix Suns tonight. There are very few opportunities in my life where you could say, would you like to change place with a professional athlete? I don't think I want to change place with any Phoenix Suns tonight. Because the Warriors are probably going to put it on them. By the way, I wouldn't want to be a Milwaukee Buck on Friday either. I just want to get that out there early on. Welcome to the show today. Gianna, good to see you. Bouton, Vixen, good to see you. Danny, we've been hanging out for a couple hours preparing this fabulous program for you. And here's what we got. Rusty Simmons joins us at the bottom of the hour. We're going to get back into the Warriors, getting back at it tonight at 3:30. Our buddy Trey Wingo stops by on a Wingo Wednesday. He'll join us at 5 o'clock tonight. Brian Geltzeiler will get us ready for a whole bunch of NBA action a little bit later on. And then John Dickinson will give us the very latest before tip-off at Oracle Arena when he joins us in our final segment tonight. Oh, almost 4 hours from now. We got an awful lot to get into. But it should be a fun night at Oracle Arena. A really, really fun night. Conquering heroes are returning. I don't know if it's as dramatic as Caesar crossing the Rubicon, but here it is. This is a team that began something that you really didn't understand what it was or where it was going until it was over. Now you know exactly what they did, and what they did was so impressive that the Warriors set a record as they lose. They set a record for excellence with their first loss of the season. By the way, there are only two teams in the NBA that can set records with losses this year, and it's the Warriors and apparently the Philadelphia 76ers. The Warriors have been so dominant that they've already now recorded more wins before their second loss than any other NBA team. The 69-70 Knicks were 23-2. The 93-94 Rockets were 22-2. The Warriors, sitting at 24-1, now have already won more games. I mean, that's how ridiculous this thing was. The record was 15 to begin the year, and they got it to 24. I mean, they almost doubled it. It's one thing to break a record. It's another thing to smash it over your knee like a backbreaker. At 24-1 this season, the Warriors need to win 49 of their final 57 games to be the single-season NBA record holder with 72 wins. Only seven teams in NBA history have ever cracked off 49 wins in 57 games. And all six of those seven went on to win a title, with the exception of the 06-07 Dallas Mavericks that were halted by the We Believe Warriors. So the Warriors are all over the stat, no matter how you look at it. It's unbelievable. By the way, we had someone ask, what are the percentages now? Percentages, Gianna, that the Warriors end up winning in how many games? Well, we got the new updated percentages, and we'll give them to you a little bit later on today. I think it's some great information, though. I love these stat packs on the Golden State Warriors. It reads like basketball pornography. It truly does, and I cannot wait to see them back on the court tonight. That is a given. Hopefully Steve Kerr joins them. That's one of the things we'll talk to Rusty about. One more note early on from the NBA, and then we'll have something from the WNBA. Oh, do you hear what Gilbert Arenas said? Did you hear any of this yet, Gianna?
I heard a little bit, yeah.
All right, do me a favor. When I do this segment, make sure you're in the studio with me so you can Google and laugh, and they're not writing about me on Awful Announcing tomorrow. But Gilbert Arenas said some stuff about the WNBA that you just probably shouldn't say in a public space. And it is combination of old school thinking and very, very funny and very insulting. And I understand why the WNBA is not too happy. We'll get into whether he's right or wrong about anything a little bit later. But stick around for what Gilbert Arenas has to say on the WNBA. Another basketball note is this audio from James Naismith, the man who invented basketball. It is unbelievable. It's like stepping into a time machine. Every single Martin Luther King Day, we play in its entirety, and I've been doing this for years now, Martin Luther King Jr.'s I Have a Dream speech. It is a powerful piece of audio on many different levels. The social commentary that it speaks of is obviously the most important level. But it also takes you back in time to a language that we don't even use anymore. Not just words, but the way people spoke, the way Dr. King spoke especially. You just don't get this anymore. And it is the closest you can get to stepping into a time machine from an audio standpoint. Well, this James Naismith audio has the same sort of effect in terms of like, wow, like people don't even talk like that anymore. Like it, even if it were recorded in crystal clear digital, just the language and how they address each other.
Interesting.
It's so different. So we will play that for you coming up in a little bit. I want to get to it early and then maybe get to it a little bit later for everyone who doesn't get into their car until about 5 o'clock when they're on their way home. By the way, Boogie Cousins' manager was thrown out of a game last night. Not Boogie Cousins, his manager, who was at the game. We'll have more on that. I want to debunk the myth today that the 49ers ownership is looking at selling anything in the near future. The only thing the Yorks will be selling are more tickets to disappointing football games to you. That's the only thing they're going to be selling. I know that it was brought up, I believe, was it Scott Osler? Danny, is that who it was? Scott Osler brought it up in a, let me just throw it against the wall, see if it sticks premise type of column, which is what a columnist does. Here's a little something I thought of. I'm going to run it up the flagpole. Salute it if you want. Well, people have taken this as like, are the Yorks about to sell? We've seen Tim Kawakami write a follow-up piece to it. And there's some really interesting stuff that Tim added to the conversation. But let me just dismiss any hope that you may have that there's a sale coming. The answer is no. Let me be clear on the topic of, are the Yorks considering selling, about to sell, will maybe sell in the next 5, 10, 15 years? The answer to all of the above is no, no way, no freaking way, and you must be high. We'll explain all three levels of how wrong that is in just a little bit. It is great to be with you here, and what do you know? The San Francisco Giants in Las Vegas today are among the World Series favorites. Oakland A's. Well, you know, welcome to the Damon Bruce Show.
The Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game. Now, back to the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
Welcome back to the Damon Bruce Show. It is fantastic to have you here. A Wednesday afternoon. You can tell the holidays are around the corner. It's getting a little chillier all of a sudden. Gianna is freezing today, apparently. You okay now?
I'm okay now. Earlier okay. Was so... I mean, I walked out the door. I was up at 2:45 this morning when I walked out the door.
God bless you,
oh,
by
my
the way.
God. It was freezing outside.
Are you a farmer?
Yeah, I am. I farm. Jeez. I go early to work on my crops.
Crops of... Cars stuck in a parking.
Cars
stuck in traffic.
A little traffic.
Oh, my Lord.
Information needed at that hour.
Bless your heart. Bless your heart. That's, look at this. I don't see 2:30 in the morning unless I meet it on the other end. Like I was up till 2:30 in the morning. God bless you. We have an awful lot for you this afternoon. There's so much going on. Rusty Simmons will be all over the Warriors with us, and we'll be all over them at the bottom of the hour. Did you see the Cleveland Browns essentially nail the 49ers season shut today like a coffin? Mike Pettine, who is the Browns head coach, doing his press conference this afternoon. And he said that his team came out wanting to fight against the Niners. Quote, wasn't sure I sensed the same attitude from the other side.
Ouch.
End quote. All I can tell you is that think of the rivalries in sports. No, excuse me. I didn't even mean to broaden it. Think of all the football rivalries. Think of all the coaches that probably have equal amounts of I respect and can't stand Bill Belichick, Pete Carroll, Bruce Arians, whoever the elite coaches are, and then the guys right underneath them. These are coaches that are actively every day trying to get each other fired. What was it when Mark Richt was asked to step down at Georgia? Nick Saban weighed in saying, you know, God, they're going to get rid of a guy like that. Why in earth would they do that? Well, because he can't beat you, Nick. here's the bill of goods for every coach in the SEC. Beat Nick Saban and Nick Saban in Alabama. Go. That's your job. Beat everyone and lose to Nick Saban. And that's what you do every year? You're not going to be around that long. You have to go and beat Nick Saban if you want to coach for a really long time in the SEC. And if you do and have a great record against everybody else but him, you're still going to lose. You're still going to get fired. Having said all that, Nick Saban ran to the rescue of another coach that was losing his job. And you see coaches circle the wagons around other coaches in their conferences and divisions all the time. In the NFL, like, again, bring it back to Rex Ryan, who's a loudmouth, and Bill Belichick, who's just the genius bully in the room. Name the times where coaches have said things specifically that embarrass the other coach. Doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. There is a fraternal understanding in the coaching community that even when things are going wrong for you, you don't go after your own players. You don't go after other coaches. It's not even an unspoken, unwritten rule. It's spoken. It's almost written.
It's how it is.
You do not turn on the fraternity member, even though he's on a rival fraternity. That's just the way coaches are. For Cleveland's head coach to come out and say, quote, wasn't sure I sensed the same attitude from the other side. Now, you'll hear a coach all the time talk about, we were up for it. We played great. We were fired up for this game. You know, what'd you think of the other team? I just want to talk about us. They'll bring it right back to them all the time. Never do you get that. Not only were we fired up, we knew right away that they were not prepared. That was a team that wasn't fired up, and we jumped on it and we pounced on it like a hungry dog shaking a ham bone. Well, 9 sacks later, guess who was right? The Cleveland Browns were right. I have never seen the 49ers, and look, I've seen poorly quarterbacked games by the 49ers. I've been covering this team long enough. I've seen poor wide receivers. I've seen poor routes. I've seen poor running games. I've seen poor tackling. I've seen bad 49er football. I have never seen a Niner team so thoroughly beaten at the line of scrimmage like that before. And nothing sets the tone for how's your team playing? Are they dialed in? Are they playing hard? Are they quitting fast? Quite like how your line is playing. Whether they're good enough to get the job done or not, I understand that the Niners were so banged up along this offensive line, and apparently Alex Boone is now out of the picture. It's not going to get any better without him. It wasn't just the sacks that they were giving up. It was the body language. It wasn't just the guy who was laying on top of Blaine Gabbert. It's the three or four other guys who were just a heartbeat away from doing themselves. You had five guys getting beaten along the line of scrimmage all afternoon, all day. From tackle to tackle, that was bad. And that wasn't a fighting, dialed in, locked together, standing our ground football team. Not only was there dissension in the Niner locker room, and you see the players starting pointing at each other, now you got an opposing head coach, essentially. You know that scene in The Shining where Scatman Carruthers is coming back to the Overlook Hotel and he's walking through the lobby, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, here's Jack Torrance with a fire axe, just boom, right in his chest? Well, today, Tom Sula caught a fire axe from another coach right in his chest. .221 total yards of offense against Cleveland, a defense that ranks 29th in the NFL, giving up nearly 400 yards per game. It was bad. This isn't me piling on. This is NFL head coaches piling on. And you don't see that very often. These guys do not want to quickly get the other one fired. As a matter of fact, I guarantee you, if you put it up to a vote of every single other NFL head coach, it would be a unanimous vote to bring Tom Sula back in 2016. I bet you every other NFL coach would vote yes on Tom Sula 2016, which is probably all you really need to know. The NFL coaches can't wait to see him return. What a great idea that would be. Damon, New York's probably going to try to sell us a promise by drafting Jared Goff, even though they have no O-line. Goff, maybe he'll put some butts in seats. Thank you very much for the text. You should have signed it. You would have gotten credit. Now, I can tell you this. If the Niners signed Jared Goff, we'd have to get my producer, Danny, a straitjacket.
Because he would freak out.
He would just go nuts. He's a huge Cal fan. He's a big Niner fan. Now, if the Niners thought, hey, we just need to draft that quarterback from Cal, it'll put butts in seats, it's good business, they would have drafted Aaron Rodgers, so I'm not following that. And the truth is, even though I did see Goff linked to the Niners in some mock draft that I believe Danny retweeted. That was you, Danny.
Todd McShay.
There you go, Todd McShay. Wasn't Danny's fault. It was Todd McShay's fault. He got excited.
I tweeted change his shorts.
Did you change your shorts? Did you get excited?
I needed to.
I don't think Goff is the instant answer for anything going on with the San Francisco 49ers or the Santa Clara Niners or wherever they may be in their own minds. Really doesn't matter who you got playing when you're not ready to play. And that is now the theme of this season, cemented by the Cleveland Browns of all teams. When the Cleveland Browns say, you done, you done. Rusty Simmons, all over the Golden State Warriors for the San Francisco Chronicle, and they're back over the court tonight. Phoenix Suns are in town. Five-game home court streak coming up. Five games in a row. I'm not going to say they're definitely going to win all these games. Just write it down. Don't worry about it. But, yeah, they could definitely win all these games. Write it down. Don't worry about it. That's coming up with Rusty next here on The Damon Bruce Show.
The Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game. The Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
Again, I've missed my favorite TV program, the Golden State Warriors. It's the best show on television. It's the best show in sports. And no repeats, though. That's the thing. I don't want any reruns. I want all new original episodes. And we get the next episode tonight. This episode is called Phoenix Suns at Home. To talk about it, we've got Rusty Simmons from the San Francisco Chronicle joining us to chit-chat about this team that is returning pretty much as triumphant as you can after a loss. 24-1 is so remarkable, Rusty. I really hope that the crowd gets there early and acknowledges this. Now that we know the scope of the streak, it needs to be applauded one more time before we just move on. This has been one of the most special beginnings to any season ever.
Yeah, I agree with you. And the Oracle fans are usually really good about this stuff. You know, twice Warriors have come back from seven-game trips to 6-1 before, and the reception they've gotten at Oracle has been unbelievable. And so now they're coming home at 24-1. I assume it'll be almost like the playoffs where when they come out for their pregame layup line, the fans stand and cheer and refuse to sit until after the opening tip. I bet it'll be one of those seats.
I think it's going to be a good one tonight. And if I'm the Phoenix Suns, you know, I'm coming in getting ready to get clocked. I mean, I really am. This is a Warrior team that can now really focus one game at a time, one opponent at a time, change things up, not try to ride the streak, but now they can get back to riding the schedule. This is a team where, you know, they've matched up well against a very good backcourt before and probably will again. And just look. Can we give Boston half of Milwaukee's win for that first loss of the year? I mean, that double overtime had as much to do with that loss as anything the Bucks did.
It did, yeah. Boston gets a part of it. The schedule makers get a part of it to make the Warriors finish a seven-game road trip on a back-to-back in Milwaukee. They had nothing left. And you could see a couple times where they were trying to turn it on, and they were kind of surprised they couldn't. And even at the end, with 8.5 minutes or so left when they put Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, Draymond Green back in the game, they all thought they were going to win the game. And when they finally got subbed out, they looked over the scoreboard in disbelief. So they had won so many in a row, found ways to win so many different ways. I think even though they were exhausted, they thought they would figure out a way to win that game.
And that is why this team really does have this heartbeat of a champion that motivates them and pushes them to do something that no other team would really even ask to do itself. You know, I mean, if you even offered Greg Popovich the chance to go 24-0, he might say no if it ever required too many spent minutes. But this was a very special moment in time. Tell me a little bit about the flight home, which I heard was maybe the single most joyous return flight after a loss in NBA history. This team was celebrating, probably a little relieved it was over if you put them to the lie detector test.
Yeah, it was interesting how much perspective the players had within 30 minutes, an hour of the game when we started to talk to them in the locker room. They're so competitive that I expected them to be frustrated and to be talking about the mistakes and the turnovers, the defensive rotations. And instead, they talked about how great the streak was and how they enjoyed the moment and enjoyed the media circus that was traveling with them. And I thought Draymond Green was right on the money that he said, and now we can start our regular season. In a lot of ways, the first 25 games were just an extension of the playoffs and that circus and hype that followed them then. And they had that perspective, and they thought, okay, we had a fantastic road trip, 6-1. Let's celebrate on the way home. And that's exactly what they did. They got Sunday off and got back to work on Monday.
One of the things that they've been doing is resting and hopefully having a little fun, just kind of, you know, just unplugging a tiny bit before you plug back in all the way tonight at tip-off for Phoenix. Tell me about the Luke Walton-Steph Curry three-point shooting contest that it was won by Luke Walton. How's that possible? Was he getting layups and Curry was shooting from the other free throw line?
It is very handicapped like that. Yeah, I've only seen them do this on the road before, but I guess since Steve Kerr isn't shooting free throws with Steph Curry after practices right now, that maybe Luke Walton is stepping in to do this sometimes. But the idea is that Luke Walton gets to shoot three-pointers from five positions on the court, and then Steph gets two, and Luke Walton chooses them. So he picks really odd angles for them, but still, Curry getting two shots, Walton getting five times as many shots as Curry two. You still think Curry has a chance to win, but he did not today. And Curry took them all right-handed. I've seen him at sometimes when this competition happens, handicap it even further and do left-handed. But he shot right-handed and lost to the coach today. So that usually means that Curry is going to have a huge game when he follows that up after a shoot-around.
Are you telling me Curry can shoot left-handed threes?
I've seen him in San Antonio specifically. I remember watching this. We were sitting on the scorer's table at the end of shoot around, and he sat in the left corner and shot left-handed threes, and between 10 and 12 in a row he made. And then just dance off the court.
I couldn't use a knife with my left hand. I can't brush my teeth with my left hand.
I know. It's remarkable. You think that he can do things like that because you see the way that he uses his left to pass and dribble. But it is a completely different motion to shoot or to throw a ball left-handed. It's remarkable to see him do it. I watched him at an all-star break. I forget now who it was. Maybe, I'm going to say it's O.J. Mayo, but I may be off there. Somebody was talking trash to him during a rookie sophomore thing. And so he beat him left-handed in a game of force. So he is magnificent with his left hand.
Yeah, I mean, like, I expect a guy at the NBA level to be finished around the rim with both hands. I expect you to be maybe even good from inside of 5 feet. You want to go, like, ceremonial free throw line, Hank Gathers tribute, one left-handed shot. Like, I expect you to pull one up, but, like, just draining threes from the corner with your offhand is ridiculous. Rusty Simmons here from the Chronicle on 95.7 The Game. What's the latest on Harrison Barnes? We know that he is not playing this week. Do you expect him back against maybe Utah a week from tonight?
Yeah, I think that's probably the next chance that you might be able to see him. I still wouldn't be surprised. We're at about 4 weeks now. I still wouldn't be surprised if they get to six. On a high ankle sprain, a lot of times it is 5 or 6 weeks. But he sure seems like he's a lot closer. He's taking full jump shots now where he's not favoring the left ankle when he lands. He's doing a ton of dribbling and ball handling drills where he's using both his left and right sides. And Brandon Payne, a guy who works with Stephen Curry during the offseason and started working with Harrison Barnes, has come in this week while the Warriors at home, and he'll be here 10 days to work with both Stephen Curry and Harrison Barnes. And that makes me believe that they do some stationary work, but they do a lot on the move. And that makes me believe that Harrison's getting closer. So when we get an update again Saturday or Sunday on Barnes, I wouldn't be shocked if he's ready. But again, another week wouldn't be that far out of the range for a normal high ankle sprain.
Obviously, Clay didn't have an ankle issue anywhere in the neighborhood of Harrison Barnes, and he played in Milwaukee. Any residue off of those minutes in Milwaukee?
He sure didn't seem to think so. I thought in that game, everything that he missed was short. And I thought that usually, to me, for a shooter, says it's something with his legs.
Legs. every day.
Yeah, and that's what he talked about when he came back. He said he didn't have any ankle problems at all, but the two practices before that game, he didn't take part in practice. So there was no cardio. There was nothing there. He felt winded 6 minutes into the game, and that's probably why a lot of those shots were short. His legs weren't there. His cardio wasn't there. But fortunately for the Warriors, it doesn't seem like there's going to be any lingering stuff with the ankle.
You know, I don't want to disrespect the Phoenix Suns. Obviously, they got a good backcourt. But let's move on to the real opponent of the year, and it's going to be the San Antonio Spurs. I feel like I hate the, like, it's all about the playoffs, regular season streaks don't matter. No, the regular season matters for a team this special.
Yeah.
They still haven't played the Spurs. It's going to be a while before they do. This is the only team in the NBA that I think deep down inside the Warriors might be a little afraid of, and they should be. That's how good this Spurs team is.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think with the Spurs game last night, they've now passed the Warriors for point differential in the league. Even with the Warriors' record-setting 24-0 start, they hadn't pulled that far away from the Spurs. And the Spurs were winning at their rate while resting players. Duncan's missed games. Ginobili, Parker have missed games. Kawhi Leonard sat out for games. And they're working in LaMarcus Aldridge and David West. And I thought that would take longer because those two players don't play the exact way that the Spurs have always liked to. So I thought that would take some adjusting time, and it just hasn't. Their defense is so good, so far above the rest of the league, that I think you can make a real argument that the Spurs are probably the best team in the league. And that's scary to think when we get to watch the Warriors and see how compelling and good they are every game. I think the Spurs are right there with them. And beyond those two, that tier is so far above everybody else in the league, it's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, the Cavaliers are, I think, 2B behind. You know, if the Warriors are 1 and the Spurs are 1A, the Cavaliers are 2. They're not 1C.
Right. Right.
They're definitely a step down. Maybe when Kyrie Irving comes back, that changes. I guarantee you Kyrie Irving wants to come back and play on Christmas. Before we do that, before we say goodbye to you here, I just got a theory I want to run past you. We were talking about this yesterday, and looking at how crazy the Warriors' schedule was at the end of that road trip and how fatigue had an awful lot to do with halting the streak. one of the ways that, you know, people, how do you make the game better? How do you make the game, you know, less time with replay officials looking at replays? Maybe less of this, more of that, grow the court, make it bigger for it. To me, it's real simple. The NBA doesn't need less games. It needs more rest. Why not?
Yes.
Just get rid of back-to-backs entirely, Rusty. You got 170 days in the Warrior season. There's plenty of time to get in 82 games over 170 days without so many back-to-backs. What would the argument be to keep the back-to-backs? Tradition?
I don't think there is an argument for it anymore. I think at one point it was, a lot of times teams would save money. Like the Warriors, their first trip of the year was October 30 and 31st in Houston and New Orleans. And instead of putting another game in there, another day in there where they have to be on the road, pay the per diem and pay hotels and all that. So there was once upon a time in the NBA that was part of the reason for back-to-back.
All right, now I got $1 billion TV deal. I don't want to hear about another night at the Marriott.
Exactly. Now it makes no sense whatsoever. And I think the NBA recognizes it. They've taken the 4 games in 5 nights out of the schedule. I wouldn't be surprised if even by as early as next year that the back-to-backs are gone. And it's especially disturbing when you see a schedule like the Warriors played on this 7-game trip, because they had 3 days off in Charlotte. It would be easy to spread those out throughout the trip and not have back-to-backs. So I think it's something that they can do. I think they're cognizant of it. They showed that they can do it with the 4 games in 5 nights. And I think it won't be long until the back-to-backs are gone. And that helps everybody. The product is simply better when you do that.
Absolutely. I mean, think about it. You look back at the schedule alone. They cram all of these games into so few days. And now they get 17 days for their next 5 games. Correct. All at home. It just it doesn't make sense.
No,
Rusty, great to talk to you, man. Great to see you. I'll definitely hopefully be bumping into you on Christmas Day. Until then, though, man, thanks so much for joining us and happy holidays.
Sure thing. I appreciate you, David.
Appreciate you. Rusty Simmons from the San Francisco Chronicle. We could go on and 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 on about the Warriors, because that's how interesting they are. I found the other thing in basketball that today, for a moment or two anyways, might be interesting more than the Warriors, because the Warriors are a lot of thing, but they're not from another time. The Warriors are for our time. The Warriors are for now. This audio from James Naismith, the guy who invented the sport of basketball, from 1939, and it's the only known recording of James Naismith talking about basketball. You have to hear this. It's fascinating. And we're going to play it for you next here on 95.7 The Game.
The Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
I love a little bit of a time capsule, and we have one. A University of Kansas researcher discovered what he believes is the only audio recording of James Naismith when he described the very first game of basketball that he organized 124 years ago this month. Michael J. Zorgi discovered the audio in November at the Library of Congress. It was part of a radio show that appeared on WOR Radio out of New York City on a program called We the People on January 31st, 1939. He'll describe to you how violent the first game of basketball was. And boy, kids roughhoused a lot harder back then than they do now. And you'll hear that in just a second. But this is supposedly the only existing recording of Naismith's voice. Listen to just how these two gentlemen talk to each other and how different language is now than in 19. Look at it this way. The phrase, like, isn't used once.
I'm sure.
Go ahead. Pop the audio. Listen to this. This is from 1939.
Dr. James A. Naismith, the inventor of basketball. Dr. Naismith, how did you happen to invent basketball?
Well, Mr. Heater, it was in the winter of 1891 when I was physical instructor at Springfield College in Massachusetts. We had a real New England blizzard. For days, the students couldn't go outdoors, so they began roughhousing in the halls. We tried everything to keep them quiet. We tried playing a modified form of football in the gymnasium, but they got bored with that. Something had to be done. One day, I had an idea. I called the boys to the gym, divided them up into teams of nine, and gave them an old soccer ball. I showed them two peach baskets I'd nailed up at each end of the gym, and I told them the idea was to throw the ball into the opposing team's peach basket. I blew a whistle, and the first game of basketball began.
And what rules did you have for your new game, Dr. Naismith?
Well, I didn't have enough, and that's where I made my big mistake. The boys began tackling, kicking and punching in the clinches. They ended up in a free-for-all in the middle of the gym floor. Before I could pull them apart, one boy was knocked out, several of them had black eyes, and one had a dislocated shoulder. It certainly was murder. Well, after that first match, I was afraid they'd kill each other, but they kept nagging me to let them play again, so I made up some more rules. The most important one was that there should be no running with the ball. That stopped tackling and slugging. We tried out the game with those rules, and we didn't have one casualty. We had a fine, clean sport. 10 years later, basketball was being played all over the country. And in 1936, I saw it played for the first time at the Olympic Games. And the whole thing started with a couple of peach baskets I put up in a little gym 48 years ago. I guess it just goes to show what you can do if you have to.
Indeed it does.
By the way, that show had hot bumper music.
It did.
That was pretty hot bumper music back then.
That is really neat.
How cool is that?
Yeah.
How cool is that? So the very first time they go to play a basketball game, he's got a knocked out kid, seven black eyes, and a dislocated shoulder. That's unbelievable.
And it was to prevent roughhousing.
To prevent roughhousing. The boys were playing a little too rough. So he puts up two peach baskets. I'm guessing they score the first bucket. And just a brawl happens in
right.
the court. Is that what's going on here? So he would make the game a little bit more recognizable to what we know today by writing what he called the 13 original rules of basketball. Now, there's a 30 for 30 about how the University of Kansas obtained the handwritten original 13 rules of basketball. And they spent millions obtaining this. And basically, they are building a structure on campus, like a cathedral, which only occupant will be the original handwritten rules
wow.
of basketball from James Naismith. But I just thought that that was incredible. And imagine if every single time you and I addressed each other, I addressed you as Mrs. Franco.
Mr. Bruce.
Isn't that nuts?
It is nuts. It reminds me a little bit of how my dad talked, but it is very nuts. It's kind of neat to see, though, the difference in language and how it's changed so much. Yeah. You got a sense, too, that they had a lot of respect for the conversation.
And it was a little more sing-songy.
Yeah.
You know, we had quite a northeastern blizzard, and the boys were roughhousing. Like, I don't know. It's just a little, I don't know, the whole thing, it sounds like a Norman Rockwell painting, if a painting had sound.
Yeah.
So I just thought it was great. It was an absolute time machine, and I had never heard James Naismith before, and I'm guessing you hadn't either. Now, maybe you got all James Naismith's albums on your iPod. I don't know.
Maybe his greatest hits.
I think James Naismith and Bieber are collaborating on something right now. But I had never heard him before, and I just thought that that was so cool, and in a way it reminded me of the audio that we play every Martin Luther King Day because it feels like a time machine.
And
it's just so cool.
And it's neat to hear the origin of something from a person who actually invented it.
Yeah.
And that's truly going viral when you don't have the internet, you don't have Twitter, you don't have Facebook. And then a few years later, the country is playing your game you invented. And then the Olympics.
Right.
That's so cool.
Yeah. It's not like he sent an email to all these athletic directors like, hey, I got an idea. I mean, I can't even imagine how long it took to get a message
right.
from Springfield, Massachusetts to Boston. Like, you actually had to put a person on a pony, slap the pony in the rear end and say, run that way towards Boston. It's amazing. 888-957-9570 is the number. More of your calls coming up next hour. And why, oh, why are people throwing salt at the Warrior win streak? That's next here on 95.7 The Game.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.